come up to me and say, you know, I really respect you for what you're doing and what you're standing for. So to me, that's something that I know what I'm doing was right, and I know other people see what I'm doing is right. It's something that we have to come together, we have to unite, we have to unify and make a change.
And the struggle continues.
But Max, what was your reaction to how each team handled this, their social justice actions last night? And also feel free to comment on the reaction from the crowd as well.
Well, I mean, to me, that's really what it's about, the reaction from the crowd, which was very, as people said, disappointing and even maybe disgusting, I think is a better word. I think, first of all, like the most innocent explanation of that reaction, and there's some truth to it, it may be multi-layered, is that people are like, come on, we don't want to see, we just want things to be sports the way we like them and the way we know them and everything back to normal, right? And maybe that's a reaction to that. Part of it is some bad people, you know, who don't like this idea of social justice because they subscribe to white supremacy. I mean, that's alive in this country. And part of it is just people in low-quality information news silos where they've been propagandized against just people even standing up and locking arms and what that means. But you understand that when people say even the most innocent explanation, I just want to get back to normal, what that really means. As I've been saying, in light of this pandemic, people have a real impulse to want to get things back to the way they know them. And leagues, which are predominantly African American.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local, community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now up until September 21st, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $11,000 thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact, double the fun, so go now to kboo.fm/give.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
KBOO. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:02 a.m. Next up is A Veteran's Voice.
Pull him through. Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin and Ties Engineering. And I really appreciate it. In fact, I'm in the same room that Ty's in engineering today. And it's pretty nice in here. I want to say hello to my friend Gary and Darla in Nebraska. Darla just had a knee operation, boy. And then they sent me a picture of the scar. And it's a big scar, Ty. It's a huge scar. And I've been texting with Gary this morning. And pretty interesting stuff. You know, the Democrats are going to be having a blue dot for the Democrats. And they're darling. And Gary are going to go down and get one at the Democratic headquarters. And I think they're going to put it on their balcony. They live in a condominium. I think they're going to put it on a balcony. But that's really cool. I want to say hello to my dear friend Kathy, who last Saturday's daughter got married. And I went to the wedding out in Troutdale and saw a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a long time. One of them was my good buddy, Bill Bowes, and we hung around together at the wedding, and it was really good, and it was nice to see Marcy and Dave get married. It was just great. I want to say hello to my friend Mitty and her grandchildren, who that's a great family, I'm going to do a pitch for our station right now. It's time. It's hard to kind of see. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321, or you can do like I do. I send a check to KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And we can do it. Oh, I forgot. This is when you contribute now until September 21st, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar. And that's a good thing. Dollar for dollar. Whoever's doing that matching, that's great. I want to read something. It's very quick. And I'll get started here. Terrorism. The calculated use of violence to create a general climate of fear in a population, and thereby to bring about a particular political objective. Does that sound familiar to people? Sure does to me. I was watching the TV and watching these horrible explosions. What Israel, Zionist Israel, did with those pagers and walkie-talkies. You know, the walkie-talkies are about as big as your phone that you hold in your hand, your little, I don't know what you call it, just a regular, you know, phone that you carry with you. That's about as how big they are. It's not those big clunky ones that they used during World War II. But that isn't, that though that them using those and exploding those have killed innocent people. That is terrorism. That's, there's no way to get around it. That is terrorism. Because that hurts innocent children, innocent people that are around. I saw on, I think it was Al Jazeera, English, I watch Al Jazeera. If you want to know what's going on in the world, watch Al Jazeera English. And they were showing these people at a market, and they were in a vegetable area. And one of the guys' pager exploded and hurt people all around him. And I was listening to the operations that the people who have been hurt have had eye operations, you know. They have hands and fingers blown off. You know, there was two waves of that terrorist attack. That's nothing but terror, what that did in Lebanon. That was a terrorist attack. No way about it. And I haven't, Ty, have you heard of, did the White House say something about that attack, do you know? No? Haven't heard of it? Yeah, me either. I haven't heard from the White House, from Biden, or from Vice President Harris. I want to know what they're going to say. You know, that is just, boy, that's nothing but terrorism. What that was? That was a terrorist attack, and Israel has to be held accountable for that. I heard that also that. Israel, I think he fired a rocket into Syria and killed some people, but I didn't really, you know, follow up on that one. But, you know, that terrorism, you know, in Vietnam, the U.S. would put bullets that have been worked on to explode. If they put it, if the ammunition was taken by the Viet Cong or North Vietnamese Army, and they would use that ammunition, somewhere in that box of ammunition would be a round that would explode when they put it in their rifles and fired it. You know, that also landmines, you know. It comes right down to it, you know, when wars go on, the longer they go on, the more it's going to happen that they're going to start doing things, you know, that are basically, you know, under the United Nations is an act of war. An act of war. I was reading this. You know, I worry a lot about children in wars. And Israel violated global child rights treaty in Gaza, United Nations committee says. In Geneva, UN committee on Thursday accused Israel of severe breaches of a global treaty protecting children's rights, saying its military actions in Gaza had a catastrophic impact on them and are among the worst violation in recent history. Palestinian health authorities say 41,000 people have been killed in Gaza since Israel's launched its military campaign in response to cross-border attack by Hamas on October 7th. 1,200 Israelis were killed and 22,500 hostages were taken. On those killed in Gaza, at least they said 11,355 are children. Palestinian data shows and thousands more are wounded. But if you go back, they say 41,000 Palestinians have been killed, when we know that 90%, well, it could be, they could be about right. 90% of all deaths in war is civilians. So they are probably pretty close. 11,000, probably more than 11,000, I would think, have been killed. The outrageous deaths of children is almost historically unique. This is an extremely dark place in history. I don't think we have seen before a violation that is so massive as we've seen in Gaza. These are extremely grave violations that we do not often see. Israel, which ratified the treaty in 1991, sent a large delegation to the UN hearing in Geneva between 3rd and 4th of September. Now, this is really interesting, this part. They argue that the treaty did not apply in Gaza or the West Bank, and said that it was committed to protecting international humanitarian law. It says its military campaign in Gaza is aimed at eliminating the Palestinian enclaves Hamas rulers, and that it does not target civilians, but that the militias hide among them, which Hamas denied. How could Israel say that they don't have to, that in Gaza they don't have to go by the treaty that they signed? That doesn't make sense to me. That treaty is a treaty, and you're not supposed to kill innocent civilians and innocent children at all, period, zero. The committee praised Israel for attaining, but said it deeply regrets the state party's repeated denial of its legal obligation. The 18-member UN committee monitors countries' compliance with the 1989 Convention on the Rights of the Child, a widely adopted treaty that protects them from violence and other abuses. You know, I know my buddy Gary back in Nebraska saw it in Vietnam. I know I did. You know, the children, so many children were killed and wounded and lost their parents, and they are their grandparents, and just didn't have anybody with them, and families would take these children in and take care of them. There were huge refugee camps around military bases, and my friend Don Blackburn talked about it a lot. And he was talking about one refugee camp that was around the military base. I think it was down around Cameron Bay in the middle part of South Vietnam, what was then South Vietnam, and how a fire started inside refugee camp and how many people were killed. And that's just, you know, horrible. Also, in Vietnam, they had free fire zones, which anybody inside that zone could be killed, man, woman, or child. And they also had interdiction, which they would just fire artillery rounds just anywhere, you know, not knowing if there were people out there, you know, families. They didn't know. They would just fire off these rounds. And a lot of base camps, fire support bases and everything, with their perimeters, they would have a mad minute, they'd call it, where they would just open up with everything they had, weapons they had, you know. They would fire out in front of them. And, you know, I know that some of those fire bases and some of the other bases, you know, they had people living around them. There were villages around them. But they still had that mad minute, you know, which to me was definitely wrong and a war crime. What time is it? Okay. Okay. Destruction, humanitarian situation in Gaza. Percentage of buildings likely damaged or destroyed, 59.3%. Percentage of humans likely damaged, more than... Oh, homes, not humans, homes. I'm reading kind of in the dark. Percentage of homes likely damaged, more than 60%. Percentage of school buildings damaged, 85%. Hospitals that are partially functioning, 16 of 36. Palestinian civilians facing catastrophic food and insecurity. According to the UN, is 495,000. Wow. That's pretty bad. Injury percentage. Palestinians injured in Gaza since October 7th, 92,401. Palestinians injured in the West Bank since October 7th, more than 5,400. They're really going after the West Bank right now. The Zionist Israeli state is really going after the West Bank. Israel soldiers injured since October 7th, 2000. Israeli citizens injured on October 7th. Civilians injured. They're saying around 4,000. But I don't think that's right. I don't know. You know, who am I? I'm just a veteran peace activist. Okay, what time is it? Oh, 23 up here. Okay. God, I don't want to read that. That's the hostages. Savin's kid. Oh. Forgot this back here. Civilians killed in the West Bank, 623. That's probably more now since they've been doing that action, the Israelis' invasion and occupation of the West Bank. I'm sure it's a lot more than 623, because a lot of those killed Palestinians killed in the West Bank was killed by the Zionist settlers. They can just go in and kill people and take their homes, and they don't, nothing happens to them. The military protects them. The government of Israel protects them. I think it was in the West Bank. I saw a video of a building that had been, I think, hit by mortars or I'm not sure, I don't remember. But there was IDF, Israeli Defense Force soldiers, on top of it, and they were throwing the bodies of Palestinians that they had killed off the roof. They were just throwing bodies off the roof. You know, that's definitely really hard to watch. During the hearings, the UN body has no means of enforcing its recommendations, although countries generally aim to comply. But we know that Israel is not going to comply. If they're saying that this treaty that they signed in 91 doesn't apply to Gaza and probably now the West Bank, you know, there's something bad wrong with that. Bad wrong with that. During the hearing, the UN experts also asked many questions about Israeli children, including details about those taken hostage by Hamas, in which Israeli delegations gave extensive response. Sabine Tassa, the mother of 17-year-old boy shot dead in October 7 attack, addressed the UN hearing and said child survivors were traumatized. The children of Israel are in an appalling state. Well, what do they think the children of the West Bank and the children of Gaza are in? These children are so traumatized. It's going to take a lot to help these children mentally, physically. Because trauma, to see your whole family wiped out, to see your friends killed, you know, to wonder where some of your family is that are buried under the rubble. How many children are buried under that rubble? You know, how many older people, men and women, older children, I mean children, are under that rubble that the bombings from Israel has devastated on Gaza? Oh, man. Ty, I think I'm going to take a break. And go ahead and play that next song for me, will you, buddy?
Yeah.
Thanks. This song is a good song, too. And I need to take a little break here. This is...
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller. Come bring your good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Come and join the living, it's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Come on, peace train, peace train.
been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a beast train. Oh, beast train, take this country. Come take me home again. Oh, beast train, sounding louder.
Ride on the beast train.
Come on. Train, oh, the roller.
Everyone jump up on the beast train.
Ooh. Yes, come on, peace train. Hey, yes, it's the peace train.
By Cat Stevens. It's time again for us to keep our radio station going. And you know, we're in our fund drive right now. And if I think with the person, whoever's matching this contributions until September 20th. Well, yeah, that's really close, Ty. your donation, which we match dollar to dollar, and you can do that by going to kboo.fm/give, or you can text to KBOO to 44321, or you can send your donations to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And we can keep this station on the air, which is a good idea. I, you know, through my life, I have always respected people who stand up and don't falter when they come face to face with evil, when they come face to face with destructions by a government, when they stand up to racism or homophobia, or when they stand up to protect our brothers and sisters in the trans community. You know, I've always respected those people. And I've tried to live by the same system that those people have done. The White Rose Opposition Movement is one of those people. In 1942, Hans Scholl founded the White Rose Movement with some of his fellow medical students. This is in Germany. Among the White Rose members was Sophie Scholl, Christopher Probot, Willie Graff, and Alexander Schmelrell. The White Rose Movement was one of the few German groups that spoke out against Nazi genocide. The bravery of those people is just, because we'll of Nazi tyranny and the apathy of the German citizens in the face of the regime's abominable crimes outraged idealistic White Rose members. Many of them had heard about the mass murders of Polish Jews as a soldier on the East Front. From a soldier on the East Front, Hans Scholl had also seen firsthand the mistreatment of Jewish forced laborers, and heard of the deportation of large number of Poles to concentration camps. These kids, college kids, university kids, medical students, saw what was happening and they took a stand. Within the United States, Sophie Magdalena Scholl is not the best known resistance fighter, but her story is a powerful one. She was a key member of the White Rose Society, a resistance group run by students at the University of Munich who distributed leaflets and used graffiti to decry Nazi crimes and the political system while calling for resistance to the Nazi state and the war. On February 22nd, 1943, she was beheaded for her treason at just 21 years old. The Nazis were still using the guillotine. The bravery of these people. Sophie was born May 21st, 1921. The fourth of six children to an upper middle class family in the south of Germany. Robert, her father, was a mayor of a city, an idyllic town in the northeast of the modern state of Baden-Württemberg. When Sophie was 10, the family moved to Ulm, a mid-sized southern town dated back to the Middle Ages, where her father worked as a state auditor and tax consultant. After the Nazis came to power in January 33, Sophie, along with most of her siblings, was an excited and happy follower of the National Socialist cult for children. The teenager believed the ideals propagated at the time, similar to many of their compatriots. Sophie was particularly intrigued by the focus on nature and the communal experience. She joined a Bund Dextring Madel League of German Children and quickly rose in the ranks. The parents, especially her father, did not like their children's involvement in the Nazi youth group and made no secrets of it. A critic of the party from the beginning who had raised their children firmly grounded in Christianity. I got lost here somewhere. Hold on. I'll get back. Oh, in the Christian tradition, Robert Scholl viewed the development in Germany and their children's interest in Nazism was growing fear and horror. Lively discussions were a daily occurrence at the dinner table, teaching the children the value of open and honest conversation, a rarity at the time. Sophie's siblings, especially her older brother Hans, later to become the founding member of the White Rose, also were members of the non-Nazi group of young people. These associations shared and propagated a love for nature, outdoor adventures, as well as music, art, and literature of Nazi romanticism. Originally seen as compatible with Nazi ideology by many, these alternative groups were slowly dissolved and finally banned in 1936. Hans remained active in one such group, however, and was arrested in 1937 along with several of the Scholl siblings. The arrest left a mark on Sophie's conscience and began a process that eventually turned her from a happy supporter of the Nazis to an active resistance fighter. On September 1st, 1939, Hitler invaded Poland, and two days later, France and Britain declared war on Germany. The older Schuller brothers were sent off to fight on the front. Sophie's life in Ulm changed as well. She graduated high school in the spring of 1940 and started an apprenticeship to become a kindergarten teacher. She eventually wanted to study biology and philosophy in order to be admitted. Students had to spend a period of time working for the state. In the National Labor Service. Sophie hopes that becoming a teacher would allow her to substitute the National Liberation Service where were squashed, and she instead had to enter the service in the spring of 1941. She hated it. The military-like regime and mind-numbing routine caused her to find solace in her own spirituality, guided by reading theology of Augustine of Hippo. She wrote down her thoughts, noting that her soul was hungry. She longed for an autonomous life, an end to the war, and for happiness with her boyfriend Fritz, who was now fighting on the Eastern Front. Her doubts about the regime grew. Our current state is a dictatorship. Our current state is a dictatorship of evil. We know that already. I hear you object, and we don't need you to reproach us for it yet again. But I thank you if you know that. Then why do you act? Why do you tolerate these rulers gradually robbing you, in public and in private, of one right after another, until one day nothing, absolutely nothing, remains but the machinery of the state under the command of criminals and drunkards? The group put out a lot of pamphlets, and I'll get to that. Robert Schuller viewed the development in Germany and their children's interest in not... Oh, I already read that, sorry. White Rose pamphlet. That was what I just read, was from one of the White Rose pamphlets. In their attempt to gain traction for the resistance and to stop the war effort, they gave clear advice and advocated sabotage of Hitler's war machine. Their fifth pamphlet stated, "And now every convinced opponent of National Socialism must ask himself how he can fight against the present state in the most effective way. We cannot provide each man with a blueprint for his acts. We can only suggest them in general terms, and he alone will find a way of achieving this end. Sabotage in armament plans and war industry, sabotage at all gatherings, rallies, and public ceremonies and organizations of the Nationalist Socialist Party, obstruction of the smooth functioning of the war machine. Try to convince all your acquaintances of the senselessness and continue of the hopelessness of this war to our spiritual and economic enslavements at the hands of the National Socialists, of destruction of all moral and religious values, and urge them to resist." In January 1948, the group felt empowered and hopeful. Their activism seemed to be working, rattling the authorities and sparking discussions among their peers. Their groups were well organized, and they were about to set up even more connections to other underground resistance groups. Observing the political situation in Germany in January 1943, Sophie and the White Rose members believed a change in the country was imminent. The German army's disastrous defeat in Stalingrad, Russia, was a turning point on the Eastern Front, and voices of dissent grew louder at the University of Munich. After students were publicly called out for war resistance, they outraged them to work more boldly, distributing the flyers directly in person and writing slogans like "Down with Hitler" and "Freedom" on the walls around Munich. Their sixth and last pamphlet read, "Even the most dutiful Russian has had his eyes opened, and by terrible bloodbath, which, in the name of the freedom and honor of the German state, they had unleashed upon Europe, unleashed anew each day. German name will remain forever garnished unless finally the German youth stand up, pursue both revenge and atonement, smite our tormentors, and found a new intellectual Europe. Students, the German people look to you. The responsibility is ours, just as the power of the spirit broke the Napoleonic terror in 1813. So too will it break the terror of this nationalist socialist in 1943. Hans and Sophie distributed them at their university on February 16th for the fellow students to find walking between classes. At some point in what we can assume was an attempt to make even more people see the flyers, Sophie pushed a stack off a railing onto the central hall, what is now an iconic scene in every movie and documentary about the group, was the moment that changed everything. The pamphlets dropped was seen by the janitor, a staunch supporter of Nazis, who had Hans and Sophie immediately arrested by the Gestapo. The draft for the seventh pamphlet was still in Hans' bag, which led to Christopher Probst's arrest the same day. So they got squealed on. There's mugshots of Sophie and her brother Hans after their arrest by the Gestapo on February 1943. They're just young kids. Just young kids. The three endured a mock trial after long and arduous interrogation. They took all blame for the White Rose actions. This attempt to save their friends from persecution failed in the end. Willy Graf, Alexander Schromel, and Kurt Huber were arrested later in February and put to death shortly thereafter. After a half-day trial led by the infamous Roland Freisler, president of the People's Court, Hans, Sophie, and Christopher were sentenced to death for treason. Despite the heroic prospect, Sophie did not waver. Freisler asked her as the closing question whether she hadn't indeed come to the conclusion that her conduct and the action, along with her brother and other persons in the present phase of the war, should be seen as war criminals. Sophie's answer. I am now, as before, of opinion that I did the best I could do for my nation. I therefore do not regret my conduct and will bear the consequences that result from my conduct. Sophie Scholl. Sophie Scholl, Hans Scholl, Christopher Probst were executed by a guillotine on February 22nd, 1943. While their deaths were only barely mentioned in German newspapers, they received attention abroad. In April, the New York Times wrote about student opposition in Munich. In June 1943, Thomas Mann, in a BBC broadcast aimed at Germans, spoke of the White Rose action. The text of the six leaflet was smuggled into the United Kingdom, where they were repainted and dropped over Germany by Allied planes in July of that same year. The post-war Germany, the White Rose was and is revered. A myriad of schools, streets, and prestigious awards are named after individual members. The group are the siblings. Sophie's story looms especially large in the history of Ulm. She personifies the importance of acting according to one's beliefs and of following your conscience, even in the face of great sacrifice. In our collective memory, her story reminds us not to be silent and fight for what Sophie wrote on the back of her indictment a day before she was killed. She wrote, "Freedom." The bravery of those people in the face of the most horrendic slaughter of the Jewish people, the killing of the people in France and in Poland and in Russia, and these kids stood up to the Nazis. They believed in what they were doing. They knew that the Nazis were wrong. They saw firsthand what the Nazis were doing. But they still stood up, made those leaflets, passed them out. It wasn't just in Munich that their posters and stuff were put out and slogans written on walls. You know, it was at that time in 1943. More people were standing up and making the decision that this war had to stop. That the slaughter of the Jewish people was one of the worst crimes in the history at that time. The bravery of these kids is just astonishing. I think about it, some of my friends who have stood up against the craziness of governments, of organizations in Central and South America, whose children stood up and took a stand. Even during the Vietnam War, in South Vietnam, in Saigon and other cities, students stood up and said the war needs to stop, because children and the elderly, the sick, were being killed. Like I said before, more bombs were dropped on South Vietnam than in World War II, if I'm correct. More bombs were dropped on South Vietnam than were dropped on North Vietnam, which were supposed our enemy. When those bombs drop, you know, they have no eyes, they have no conscience. Bombs are just pieces of death. Pieces of death. landmines, still a problem in Laos and Cambodia. Unexploded ordnance in Laos and Cambodia, and still in Vietnam. In Afghanistan, when the U.S. was bombing in Afghanistan, they were dropping cluster bombs. These are bombs that open up and just throw tons of small, dangerous pieces of with explosives in them, cover whole fields. If they did, they had a pretty high rate of not exploding. So here were these things laying out all around that looked like a toy. Some of them looked like a butterfly. And children were picking them up. And they exploded. Exploded and killed children. I know that this has been pretty rough today. I feel pretty bad. You know. But, you know, we have to talk about this stuff. We have to. We have to take a stand on this, against this stuff. You know, I remember our brothers and sisters of the Northwest Veterans for Peace. We would go down on the riverfront when the warships were here, and we'd do anti-war slideshows on the side of those Navy ships. That was just great. Don't have much time, Ty. Yeah. We'll be back on... don't forget to donate. We'll be back on October 18th at 9 a.m. And there it is.
Happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, hey, this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train. Come bring your good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Come and join the living, it's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10 a.m. You're also listening to
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting.